Good afternoon. This is Down to Brass Tacks. I am Christina Hines, ably assisted by Mr. Dennis Johnson. And on the line, I have Carlos Fort, who wanted to talk to us a little bit more about the central bank's report. So go ahead, Carlos.
Hey, Dr. Hines. So if I should put that $21 million deficit over the first 6 months of the current financial year, which began in April. So we're talking about a period that will overlap the impact of COVID-19. That $21 million deficit is only about 0.2% of GDP in an economy that's about $10 billion. Moreover, that deficit is the result where government would have also paid interest on its debt, mm-hmm. As well as principal payments on the debt, mm-hmm. and in a region of about $350 million. So if we exclude debt servicing, we can see clearly that the government has more or less been extracting more out of the economy than it has been putting back into the economy. And in circumstances where we have a significant recession, by any objective measure, the government's response has been inadequate to date. And to the extent that they may announce that they have made announcements or there may be further future announcements, it is rather late. We are now in October. Within days, we would begin November. The year is almost over. And I guess the point that I'm making is that 16% decline in economic activity could have been somewhat mitigated, mm-hmm. So that we would have had the decline, perhaps not as large, maybe 10% decline, but not 16. The point I'm making is that the government has been very good in its rhetoric. We first heard, I think back in April or May, about a $1 billion unprecedented stimulus program. We would learn subsequently or with any scrutiny that was largely speaking about private sector capital projects and therefore should not have been characterized as a government stimulus program.
What should it be categorized as?
Well, government re-announcing private sector investments that have been touted going back to the previous Stewart administration.
Mm-hmm. So not connected to this current crisis then?
No. Okay. So I think it was perhaps misleading to characterize mm-hmm. it in that way, but that doesn't really matter because we haven't seen much of that investment in any event, which raises a more significant question. The current administration, it would seem, is having challenges with respect to facilitating or attracting the type of investment that we would need, either domestic or foreign. The previous administration, the Stewart administration, had similar challenges where we were hearing projects being announced and, you know, a year go by and nothing happens. And this speaks perhaps to, one, some structural issues with respect to facilitating these projects, but also the investment climate as it relates to investors' appetite to actually go ahead and invest in circumstances where they may be considering investments. Why is it that they may have chosen to delay those investments? Now, I know certainly for tourism projects, for example, if you're going to build and construct a new hotel, you want to essentially front load your revenues and your profitability when the plant is fresh. So you don't necessarily want to open a new plant in circumstances where the market is weak, or in this case, it could be the tourism sector has pretty much collapsed because of COVID. So that may be one of the reasons why tourism investments may not have begun or may have been delayed by their principals. But it underscores the importance of the government increasing its capital spending, running a larger deficit at this point in time to mitigate the worst impacts of the crisis. And of course, when it all boils down, we are talking about supporting the livelihood of Barbadians, because that's really what the economy is all about, the well-being of individuals who are within that particular jurisdiction.
So for the listeners, Carlos, what you're saying is that the government should be spending more, because there's some people on the WhatsApp who are indicating that they're not quite clear on what it is you're saying. So someone you're saying that the government needs to spend more, but has been taking more than it has been putting into the economy.
So it seems
like people are unclear.
So reference to taking more out of the economy than putting back in would be the difference between taxes and expenditure, right? So, of course, before the onset of COVID, the government was running a pretty significant primary surplus. And what that means essentially is that government was receiving a lot more in revenue than it was actually spending. And in circumstances where we have a deficit of just 21 million in the first 6 months of the fiscal year, where 350 million of that is attributable to servicing debt and paying interest and so on, basically the circumstances as such where the government is not spending a sufficient amount of money to stimulate or mitigate the economic shortfall, essentially. So we can discuss announcements, but when we look at the figures, basically government deficit has only been $21 million for half of the financial year, right? That is that is woefully inadequate.
So we need to
essentially, government needs to spend more, and particularly in capital spending.
So we need to see the movement from announcements to actual implementation, is what you're saying?
To actual implementation.
Okay.
Now, there's a habit, I think, and it goes back to multiple administrations where announcements are made with perhaps the intention of creating in the minds of the public that the government is doing something. Mm-hmm. Right. So people hear all these announcements, and maybe that's where some of the WhatsAppers may be getting somewhat confused. And it creates the impression that the government is doing all of these things. Mm-hmm. But it's only until they're implemented that they could have an impact. And it's only until they're implemented that the government has actually done something where the management of the economy is concerned in this instance. Just quickly, I would like to comment on this. So in the question and answer session, the governor of the central bank indicated that about 76% of the bonds being issued under the BOSS program were being subscribed. And I wasn't clear what he meant by that response was that individuals were taking up the bonds that public sector workers have opted not to take, or whether that meant that 76% or 70 how much ever percent of public sector employees were actually taking the bonds. And it would be good, I think, for the benefit of the public if the government or the central bank can clarify that. So we have a better idea of how that particular program is working, and that is important because the government had mentioned, well, the Prime Minister had mentioned previously that the government was contemplating issuing pandemic bonds, mm-hmm. and we haven't heard more of that. And part of the reason could be if there isn't sufficient appetite in the market to subscribe to those bonds, you wouldn't want to issue them at such a time. But the benefit of issuing pandemic bonds would be, or issuing any type of debt domestically, would be, of course, to facilitate, to finance increasing government's capital expenditure. I should note that the government has increased its foreign debt quite significantly, and what that has meant is that our foreign debt has been rising as a share of the overall debt. And that is something that we should keep an eye on, because eventually we would have to pay back that foreign debt in foreign exchange. And that can create some pressures down the road on our foreign reserves. So those are the key things that I wanted to highlight for the benefit of the public, and perhaps to solicit a response from the government to clarify their policy agenda, as well as some of the questions that I have raised.
Okay, thank you for that. There's a question here about how long you think government could afford to pay unemployment. So you said they should extend this for a year, but is this sustainable? And then there's also a comment indicating that the deficit cannot be 0.2% of GDP, but the person generally agrees with your argument.
Well, the person needs to check the central bank report. On what basis can they say it cannot be 0.2% of
They're
GDP?
They're saying the GDP is $6.68 billion. Anyway, there's some agreement, 100% agreement, they say, but then there's a question about how long could government support this stimulus that you're proposing? So if it is paying unemployment or maybe supporting small and medium-sized enterprises or other types of interventions, is this sustainable?
Well, the question of sustainability, I think is a moot point. It doesn't have a particular relevance in these circumstances, in as much as all indications are right now that even in terms of in the global context, that we would begin to recover from the COVID recession by mid-2022. Now, that speaks to the economies growing sufficiently that they would be at least to the level that they were at before COVID. But growth in the developed or industrialized world has begun. In Barbados's circumstance, growth is projected to be in the region of, I think, 7% next year. And that's totally possible, mm-hmm. because we are comparing to a very low base. One of the beauties about fiscal financing is that you start over fresh every financial year, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a new deficit in every financial year, so to speak. So is sustainability in circumstances where government is currently running a very tiny deficit in the context where we have an unprecedented recession is really not a concern. As it relates to the paying unemployment benefits for extending them for additional 6 months, just understand that additional 6 months will have to be financed by government, not the national insurance scheme. So essentially, government would essentially have to make funds available from its own borrowing or its own revenues to support that additional or that extension in paying unemployment benefits. And look, it's a question of, policy options as well, because the government has announced this BESS program of $300 million. I think, according to the governor, the central bank is over 40 months or so. So we're talking about 3 years and about 4 months or so, which is about $90 million a year. Again, $300 million may sound like a lot, but $90 mm-hmm. million dollars a year is really not that much in any regard. And as it relates to that, it would be good for the government to give the public an update as it relates to the details of that program, but also its implementation, how many private sector firms have taken up the wage mm-hmm. subsidy under that program. But again, I'm not particularly sold on the efficacy of that program, and mm-hmm. it would be good if we can get more details on that.
Okay, well, thank you, Carlos, for bringing this information to us and your insights. Hopefully your questions will be answered. If they're not, you can feel free to keep raising them. So,
Most definitely. Thank you for facilitating me. And I do hope that they would be answered in the interest of the public. And, you know, as I maintain, certainly we get good governance when the government is critiqued and scrutinized, and that enables them to improve their programs for the best interest of the public as well.
Yeah, I agree with you. One hopes that there will be improvement. So thank you for that call. Let's take another good afternoon. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. You followed the debate last night?
I did.
So after the first question, I decided I'm not going to watch that. I don't want to hear no more. Because, that first question should have been structured like this.
Yeah, it was a little bit confusing.
If there were two people who approach the person who opened the seat, that was supposed to be the LP candidate first. So I'm going to use that as the example. One, the one who support you didn't have any qualification. They have any interest in working. The one who opposed you had all the qualifications, did the work, and knew the work. Who would you choose? To me, that would have made it more interesting. And that question should be posed to all of them, because we would then remember what was said, and if anything contrary to that was done, we can then go after the person, whether it's DBA or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I noticed, and it seems to be a disease among both major political parties. A lot of government buildings have been abandoned. A lot. One there by the Travelers there, the Frame Plantation Road. If you're coming from Pine Gardens, is right there on the left. They have been fenced in. It is have been run away with bush. The next one, to me, Grandary. I hear things about Grandary have been destroyed. Grandary wasn't destroyed by fire. It was damaged, not destroyed. Why is government both ready to fix these public buildings? Not looking because they're doing it, rent office spaces from private individuals. Why? And these are things that people should be talking about, because the rent is not coming out of their pocket. It's coming out of the taxpayers.
But I wonder what the cost to refurbish these buildings might be and the time frame. Because if it is extremely expensive and it will take a long time in the interim, they're going to need to rent. Okay.
You know about that? You remember the old welfare department down White Park Road or Lower Pine Hall?
Yes.
Where the government electrical office is now located?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the labor is already there.
Okay.
A lot of people felt like that building could never be, I was one who thought that it could never have been brought back to the original state. There's living proof that it can be done.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a hospital there that it's still on its knees. People can't get medical care. They can't get a lot of things. I want to know why politicians can only see what has to be done when they're in opposition. But when they get there, their sentence do worse.
I think when they get there, they see what they're actually working with and the challenges of doing all of the things they had recommended.
You know something?
Tell me.
This has been an ongoing thing for years.
Yeah,
only
it
two
would
parties
be.
Have ever governed this party. This country,
BND,
only two. So you want to tell me each time that's it, and they're not even making an effort? What I'm questioning too.
They're not making an effort. They might be making an effort. It may just be that the effort is not what we want. It's not good enough.
I
enough for you.
I remember when the hospital was on its knees again, people's money was taken and built a prison to make criminals comfortable. I can't forget that. I cannot forget that. Rather than spend money on to assist people who are sick and need medical attention, and they were saying the reason to why it was you had too many people in a cell. I can't care how many in a cell. If you didn't do something, the cell, you will be there. Wow. You won't be there. And in the meantime, people were getting operations today and getting sent home tomorrow in order to get beds. Mm-hmm. I can't forget that.
Okay.
You know, government is really a continuum.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Continuum of the foolishness.
It is. I mean, government is a continuous institution, even when different parties are in control of the government. And this is the case for many institutions. I thank you for your call so far. Good afternoon. This is Down to Brass Tacks. I am Christina Hines with you until 2 o'clock. The number to call is 434-1790, and let's take a call. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Christine. How do you do?
I'm fine, thanks. And you?
I'm wonderful. Now, I want to just talk about the pyramid scheme for a minute.
Okay.
That was up for many, many years, even being promoted on the internet. I know I told my friends in the United States, it got hurt bad too.
Mm-hmm.
1 brings 2, 2 brings 4, 4 brings 8, 8 brings 16 and 32, et cetera, down the line.
Mm-hmm.
And most people at the bottom of the scale get hurt in that scheme.
Yes.
Enough of that. There's one of your callers early this morning talk about the reefs.
About what?
The one of your callers this morning spoke about, when he talks about the environment and greening and things like that. You talk about the reefs.
Coral reefs. Uh-huh.
But sometimes people come on the airwaves and they don't have any historical data or any facts to back it up.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying because the ships were anchored off the port, that there would have had some impact on the reef. Without giving us what those impacts were, and if you had any study to prove that the reefs were being destroyed, I think that people have to come and try to put things on the table that are edifying.
Mm-hmm.
With greater commitment to what they're seeing.
You have information on that?
I'm just questioning his.
Because, you know, there's a marine protection zone in Folkestone.
Yes,
and
I'm aware.
There is another one, with Bay Street.
Yeah, Bay Street area.
Yeah.
I'm aware of that. But when you're coming to say that the reefs will be defective, we must have some solid information to tell us that. Unless you say, I have spoken to people that are looking after the reefs, and they are very concerned about certain things as a result of those ships being out there.
Mm-hmm.
So much for that. The other one is, you know, sometimes people come on, there is a professor, I don't call him a professor, but there's an expert politician who comes on the airwaves from time to time. This morning he's talking about a bloodbath, and that people don't have the right to, and some people cannot speak.
Yeah, that was a little concerning. Go ahead.
That's very concerning. I think that he's want to create challenge problems in the country. I can remember him speaking to one of the moderators some time ago, and the moderator had to put him in his place in terms of what he was saying, because people have to realize that government should be of laws rather than of men. And even as I say that, I don't necessarily mean the political government. The government of the governing of the media houses have to be of laws, and there are certain laws governing the media houses. And therefore, if you are going down the wrong road, the media house has the right, don't care how much you can talk, the media house has that right to determine if it is suitable for the airwaves and if it's going to bring them in trouble with their license. And people must realize that. I don't know if he's really alluding to the question and answer session they had last night. You don't call it a debate. It was a question and answer session. I don't think that the moderator was well prepared. I think when they removed those two other moderators who were preparing for it, that the whole thing should have been canceled, because it would have not given Mr. Joseph enough time, I believe, to really get down to the nitty-gritty of asking the questions. And he relied merely on questions coming in through the internet and things like that, which were questions that it was a question and answer session. It was not a debate in the real sense of a debate. And when it came last night to the lulls or to the cutoffs in what was called the debate, it is obvious that those things were probably scandalous. And therefore, the persons at the CBC on that occasion will have had to cut those things out. Because it's just that people go on talking ad infinitum about things and bring the stations into challenges with the law.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that whole question about bloodbath and Barbados and things like that, I am sorry that he didn't get cut about that, because that is just promoting nonsense. And mm-hmm. because you think that you are an expert, and an expert, in my judgment, is people who know more and more about less and less. And every time you come on with the same spouting, the same nonsense about what is happening in politics and things like that, yes, you might have one or two papers in your house that you could go and look back at things that happened, but everything that written in your paper is not gospel. It's not gospel, and therefore one has got to become very, very conscious of that. My final point is, what in terms of the protocols, I have not heard of anything about protocols as it relates to the COVID that takes the...
Protocols for what, for the election or in general?
No. That is not taking the disabled community on board.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very often you hear about the protocols, but I find sometimes that there need to be some specific protocols to persons suffering with disabilities. And that is something that I think you need to hear more and more about.
Such as what, though? Give me an idea of the kinds of protocols you are thinking of.
Well, I mean, for example, how do you treat the persons? I have heard something talking about check the internet for this. If you are visually impaired, how do you go to YouTube?
Mm-hmm.
How do you go to Twitter?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're living alone, how do you get information? How do you get information if you're living alone and you cannot interact with those kind of things? You know, all these things need to be explained. Sometimes certain advertisements come on the radio, for example, and they direct you with very little information, very little verbal information, but they direct you to Twitter or the YouTube or one of those kind of things. But the person that is visually impaired or the person that cannot have the systems that are now out there, they need to still get information. And therefore, the persons who are thinking about putting out those kind of notices should really think about that very seriously.
Okay.
I think the time has come for that to happen in this country.
Yeah, so it needs to be mainstreamed into everything that we do, whether it is COVID protocols or any sorts of announcements or procedures, right?
Procedures, yes. Mm-hmm. I'm in total agreement with you on that.
Okay.
Yeah, so we need to make sure that when we come, we don't try to put the panic in our country talking about bloodshed and blood community streets and all that kind of nonsense. Total nonsense, and I'm sorry that he didn't get cut by that. And I think he has to be very careful in what he brings to the media and what he brings to the people of Barbados.
Well, the fact that people are calling this program, for instance, shows that people can indeed speak. So it's a little bit ironic as well, but, you know.
So I'm very happy to have been able to offer those suggestions, and I will keep listening to you, and do have a blessed day.
Okay, thank you for calling. Good afternoon. This is Down to Brass Tacks.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon. This is Father Armstrong calling from New York.
Hi.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Are you hearing me?
Yes, I am.
Yes, I will be very, very, very brief. Only yesterday, I called and I was speaking with Mr. Johnson, but I felt that I was very rudely interrupted. I asked for 5 minutes, and I didn't even have 1 minute. And I just want you to you, Mr. Johnson, whoever, to know that actually I was calling, it was ironic, I was calling to get information about sending 3 advertisements your way to your radio station. 3 advertisements of 3 business companies that are being established in Barbados. But I just see at this point.
Good afternoon. This is Down
to
Brass Tacks.
Yes. Am I on the air?
You are.
Good afternoon, Dr.
Hines.
Moderator, Ms. Hines.
Yes. Good afternoon to you.
I'm speaking here under correction.
Okay.
I heard the opposition leader in the 12:30 news just now speaking about the children getting involved in politics.
Yes, and someone also sent a message in on that in the WhatsApp earlier, but I was unable to find the message again. Okay, also very concerned about this.
Let me tell you what happened. If this is what he's speaking about, in the nomination that now gone to Tony Moore and Reefer, when they came back from the nomination, they've been back to the headquarters by the Gleek. And there was a bunch, about 15 to 20 school children under the age, about 10, 11 years old, who saw the crowd coming up with the placards. And the children ran. I was up front side of the Prime Minister and Miss Moore. And those children ran and said, look at Tony, look at Tony, look at Miss Moore, look at Miss Moore. And they started to run across the road. Even the Prime Minister said to me, go and look after those children and get them back on the pasture, because they were on the pasture playing. But they saw the crowd, and they ran out there and said, look at Miss Moore, look at Miss Moore. And what Mr. Avali is speaking about, if he... Because Miss Moore and Miss Marty then being by the church, by a part of the thing by the church, I was talking to somebody else, and the school children ran down there. Some was upstairs, ran downstairs. They wanted to greet Miss Moore, get pictures and that. So what Mr. Avali is speaking about, untrue. Mm-hmm. No truth in that whatsoever. Those children just ran from all over. All over. Even the Prime Minister spoke to me and told me, go and look after those children and get them back on the pasture.
Okay. Well, you know, sometimes when these video clips go around, there's not necessarily the context. So people see clips and it may appear a particular way without knowing what was happening at the time. It could be misleading. So perhaps it's going on the basis of the information that he had, which may not be all of the information available.
No, I believe he was out there too.
Oh, okay.
He was out there too. He and his, he and about seven or eight of his members were out there staying up.
Well, thank you for bringing your perspective on this.